lights out, we're underway. Motorsport Republic of Podcast.
Boys.
Here we are.
We're back.
Happy Australia Day, boys.
Happy Australia Day.
Happy Australia Day.
How good's this, huh?
26th of January.
Just like that, eh?
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks for joining us today. We've got a bit to run through. Another week in motorsport. Hamilton in a Ferrari. Looked very strange, didn't it, Mark?
Thanks for the short call-up. I'm happy to be here again. Thanks, guys.
No worries. No worries. Thanks for filling in. Appreciate it.
No, it's good. What do you guys think of the iconic photo of Lewis Hamilton in the Ferrari?
Well,
get up.
The yellow helmet was the moment, I thought. Like, he always goes with something different, but he's gone back to his original... unique sort of way with his helmet there, because every time they had a photo up, when he went to Mercedes, he made it yellow again. And some people said it was just a test helmet, but I think he's gone with that.
Interesting.
Is
test helmets that common in F1?
No, not really. But yeah, there was a small article saying as much that not convinced it's actually going to be his race helmet, but I think. He's gone with the yellow. He's got the yellow logo with the Ferrari emblem, and that's the look.
I guess it wouldn't, like, a driver's helmet isn't as big as a rider's helmet, because it's not like, a rider's helmet, you can wrap it while you're riding, but you're not going to wear a Hamilton's helmet when you're driving your car to Woolworths.
It's a good point.
Or Costco for our Ohio listeners.
We've got a few Costco. Ohio listeners.
In North Carolina.
Is it interesting, that photo of Hamilton in front of Enzo Ferrari's house? And what I saw was seven windows and one door to that world championship.
Do you reckon they meant to do that?
I don't think so. I think it was a synonym. Worcestershire sauce.
Cinnamon, as in donut?
No, I mean...
Strawberry for him, Mop.
Strawberry.
It was interesting. And he looked like a bloody clown with that big thing. But then I saw... Schumacher with the same outfit get up all those years ago.
With the suit.
96. So he had 4 years, of course. Yeah. 4 years. That's what people don't remember about Schumacher. He had four hard years at Ferrari before winning a championship.
Yeah.
The thing, he just walked up and won.
So he won one before Ferrari, though, didn't he?
He won 94, 95 Benetton.
Gotcha. So, and then what engines were they running?
They had Renault engines.
Okay.
At first, they had the Ford engine. So in 94, he had the Ford engine and won the championship with the Ford engine.
Yeah.
This is obviously because Senna died and all that happened. And then in 95, they got the Renault engine.
So he won the title when Senna died that year.
I never knew that.
Yeah, he was a young gun.
Every time I think of Michael Schumacher, and I've watched a doco and I've completely forgotten, I always think of like the early 2000s. I never think of mid-90s.
Well, because of the Ferrari, because of what we did in those five straight years and the way he won those titles, some people have forgotten about that little period where he actually won his first two championships.
Back-to-back?
Yes.
And then they went from a Ford engine to a Renault engine the next year?
So, again, 94, he had the Ford engine, and then Benetton got the deal. I think because Senna passed, had died, this was a new up-and-coming star, and Renault were like, let's put some focus here as well, because the deal was, it was exclusive, that Williams had the Renault engines.
Williams.
It was Williams-Renault, and at the time... That Renault was like the Mercedes of the last 7 years.
Yeah.
The engine that Renault had at that time was just crazy. It was just so far in front of everyone else. So Honda had pulled out end of 92, hence why Senna had a Ford engine in 93. It was a customer engine. And then halfway through the season, they ended up getting the same spec as what the Benetton had. And then into 94, Senna went to Williams because Prost... So they'd won 92, 93 championships, Williams, with... Mansell and then Prost, and then Prost retired because Senna was coming over, but then Senna dies, and then later there's that only four unfolds, and this championship between Hill and Schumacher was coming to its head there. There was a couple of strange things going on. They black flagged Schumacher at Silverstone for overtaking Hill on the warm-up lap, so they were trying to make the championship close, and it actually got down to that last race in Adelaide, as you remember, with the crash there. I don't know if you remember that.
It's famous, but turned in on
as that year towards the end of that year, it was announced that now Benetton were going to get the Renault engines that Williams had.
Yeah,
so that's when he won that title, and then he left. He could have won in 96. He could have won three straight titles.
Who raced for Benetton in 96?
No, it was him. In 96, it was Berger and Alesi because they'd come from Ferrari. So they got sacked from Ferrari. To make way for the shoe, they both got the flick. So they were both Ferrari drivers in 95. This is Berger and Alesi. And then shoe comes in, wants a different driver, none of those two, and they'd be a bit past it anyway. And then they both managed to go to Benetton because Briatore is running the show still there. And so they just went straight to Benetton. And everybody thought they'd be competitive. They've got the most current car, but they were nowhere. And that just showed how good he was. And the weird thing of the back end of that was is that he tested the 95 car. This is Schumacher. So Lewis was in the 23 car the other day doing those laps. When the shoe jumped in for his first test, he jumped in the year before car because the 96 car hadn't sort of come out yet. And it was the V12. And he said, and a lot of people said at the time, that he would have won the 95 championship had he been in that car. That's how good that 95 Ferrari.
They went to V10s in 96.
Yep.
So there were still running V12s and V10s 95. At the same the same time.
Up until that's 95.
Right. Yeah, because Ferrari always ran the V12 up until they could. Yeah.
Up until they could.
That was
Enzo. That was all Enzo.
Who won the championship in Schumacher's first year at Ferrari?
Damon Hill. This is when Villeneuve came over. So there was this thing going on. So Villeneuve was groomed to drive for Ferrari because of his old man, right? Gilles Villeneuve, this is before your time, a bit my time. Yeah, there's legendary Gilles Villeneuve in the 70s, and he died in the Ferrari. This is the other thing to it, this stigma to his name and the brands, that he died in a Ferrari. And so he had a son who was racing in IndyCars. This is Jacques Villeneuve. And everybody along those lines, he's going to be a Ferrari driver one day. And as soon as Schumacher went there, that was it. It was never going to happen because Schumacher started forming his own thing, became successful, became his own mark in the sense, his own brand. And that was it. Villeneuve got into the Williams. So he took, let me get this right. So 96, Schumacher goes to Ferrari, okay? Hill was already at Williams, okay, with Senna in 94. So now it was Hill and Villeneuve. So this is, I mentioned this the other night, you know, Bernie Ecclestone just straight up plumbed Jacques Villeneuve in the top winning car. Like in the, it was a championship and did like 6,000 kilometres testing. And that's why he was, when he came to Melbourne, I think he got pole position. It was all ready to go for him. But then as the season went on, you know, Hill stepped up a bit, I suppose. And so he won the championship when Schumacher went to Ferrari.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And then when did the shoe win his championships in the late
90s? 2000.
In the Ferrari. 2000 was his first one in the Ferrari.
And he won seven in a row. Sorry, he won five in a row. Yeah.
Gotcha.
2004.
Because then the McLarens had a run for a year or two, didn't they, in the late 90s?
Look, those late 90s, the McLaren of Mika Hakkinen was dominant. The West McLarens, you might remember. And they had an advantage. But the shoe, I mean, I'll sit here and say it now. The best year he had behind the wheel was 1998, okay? He didn't win the championship, but for pure driving ability, this is my opinion, obviously, but he was driving every single lap of every single race 11/10. It was crazy to watch.
Going back to the McLarens as well, they should have probably won 2000 and 2001. They were plagued with the reliability. There was that many races, they got onto the grid at the start, and then they just...
Yeah, 01... So 2000s when it fell away for them, and this was an engine thing because they were using beryllium. It's an exotic metal.
Sounds exotic.
Yeah. So this is when F1 engines were getting crazy.
Yeah.
Right. They were using these exotic materials, right? Light, and then they banned that material, and that's when Mercedes started going down. It literally coincided because in 2001, Mika started having DNFs. Both him and DC, and then in 02, I always remember this. Kimi's first year at McLaren, out of 16 races, he had 11 DNFs.
Shit,
11 DNFs in his first year at McLaren. The car was fast, but just, and then 02, they tried to play catch up, and this is when McLaren became a joke. They were just, the thing was made out of balsa wood. There was a race there in Germany. Kimi's come down the front straight, and the rear wing just flies off the car. as he's about to turn in at 200 k's, and the car just pirouettes into the barrier. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Mm.
Sorry, Tom. Sorry.
Well, there's that famous scene, and it might have been 03 when Kimi conked out in the McLaren and walked back to his yacht.
Yeah.
But that might have been later.
That was later. That was later. That was 06. Because he was fed up by then. So 03.
No, I don't think it was 06.
It was.
Because he went to Ferrari 07.
That's why. He was already, fuck you to Ron Dennis. Yeah. Mm. Okay.
So when, just going back to the shoe real quick, when he went to Ferrari, were you like, what's he doing? Like, was that considered a crazy move back then?
It sort of wasn't, because at the time, it came out later, years later, that there was all this fishy stuff going on with the Benetton. They reckon, because they banned all the electronics at the end of 94. End of 93, traction control, this sort of stuff. And people were sort of saying, no, they're still running it. Elite. There was this cloud over the Benetton in 94 and 95 about this illegal traction control, and they were trying to cover it up. And I think he just wanted out. That's how it looked when years later, because everyone's like, why is he going now? Like, this, he's got the best car. And I'll say it straight. He would have walked 96 with a leg in the air, right? So he could have won three championships. And then just gone to Ferrari. So it was a surprise that he walked away from that. Because in 95, he won, like, there were 16 races. I reckon he won 9 or 10.
Mm.
He dominated that championship in 95. Now that he had the same engine as the Williams, it was no contest. It was like watching Max sort of thing. And then he goes to Ferrari. Well, they were nowhere. They were nowhere, you know. And he won his first race in the wet at Spain. I might remember that. Tom, I don't know if you do, but he...
No, it was Spa, wasn't it?
No, Spain. Spain 96. Williams
took... Oh, yes. Sorry.
So Williams had this dominant car
in
96.
In the Ferrari, you're saying the first win. Yeah,
so his first win in...
His first win for Benetton was Spa. Yeah.
Sorry, mate. You're right.
But his first win in the Ferrari was...
talking about Ferrari.
But famous, just torrential rain. And obviously, you know, we all know Formula 1, when the rain comes out, it's where the real stars shine.
Yeah.
And it was one of those days, and it was just pissing down, so...
So he did those hard years at the Ferrari there, and before he got to the success. But
he built the culture there, didn't he? He rebuilt it again.
Well, he brought all the Benetton people over.
Okay.
Okay. He brought the designer, brought the engineers, brought Ross Brawn.
Yeah.
You know. So it was, look, I used to say at the time that Ferrari was just a repaint of Benetton.
Mm.
It was all the same people. And once he won that, once that breakthrough happened in 2000. Like, he won the next 5 years. And 06 only just missed out, like, to Alonso. He went down to the wire. So he could have won six in a row. And that was a silly thing. He was forced out, you know, because Kimi was... Then the politics started between Montezemolo and John Todd. Because there's Montezemolo, who the big guy at Ferrari at the time, he was thinking of the future. Whereas Todd was like, no, we'll just keep the house. All is now with Schumacher. And those two had this massive... power trip of a fallout, not fallout, but just, and in the end, Schumacher got screwed. It made no sense for him to retire at end of 06. It made no sense.
Mm.
No sense. Just,
and famously came back and raced.
Well,
for
this
Mercedes
is why I think the 3 years that he was out, he knew he wasn't done. Mm. You know,
that's a shame though for one of the greats of sport.
Look, he would have won 07 and 08, given how. Those two championships, McKimi and this one, Alonso and Lewis came in. They were tripping over each other for two straight years. Those three or four drivers, Massa as well. Now eight, he just would have walked it.
What was his first year in F1?
Who's his?
Schumacher.
91.
91.
So he came in. The famous story is, I might admit to this once before, but there was a French driver named Bertrand Gachot. And he was driving down the M1 in England, gets pulled over by the police and uses pepper spray on the policeman. So they lock him up.
That's wild.
So Eddie Jordan's out of a driver. So he's driving for Jordan F1. This is Eddie Jordan. And he needs a driver for this next race, which happened to be Spa. So he gets on the phone, rings up this guy, Willie Webber. And there was a sports car program that Mercedes had Wendlinger, Schumacher and Fredson. So at the time, Schumacher was a sports car driver, you know. Le Mans type series, right? Yeah, I've got this guy. Yeah, oh, has he driven around Spa? Oh, yeah, he has. Never driven around Spa, right? So he sold him a dummy by getting him in the car. He did a test at Silverstone the week before, and they couldn't believe how fast he was, like,
straight
at this
away,
test. They thought, oh, because they used a short circuit at the time at Silverstone, and they thought, no, the witch's hats aren't up because this time's too fast, because they have this witch's hatch on the back straight. And then he turns up to Spa and puts it seventh on the grid on debut. And this is behind Senna, Berger, Prost, Alesi, Patrese, Mansell, the six top guys at the time, he was next in line, and then it was just a sensation. Like, who's this kid? You know, he's come out of nowhere and he's putting this car. Then this car was a mid-pack car. This wasn't nowhere near a podium car. And the best thing that happened to him, he burnt the clutch. You know, he didn't have first F1 start. He's coming up Eau Rouge and he had to pull over. But he'd done enough that weekend.
Mm.
And the very next race, he was in the Benetton. Crazy. It was just crazy. Like, 2 weeks later, he's signed for Benetton. I'm like, hang on, he's just had his first race in a Jordan and he's in the Benetton at Monza. And then there was a wet race later that year. I think it was that first Spanish Grand Prix, and he showed some talent in the wet there in this midfield. Benetton was a bit better. And then a couple of years later, won the championship and then went to Ferrari. And as we know, the rest is literally history.
Yeah. What I love about that as well, and we talked about Spa, is his first win was at Spa.
Yeah, 12
months
later.
So it's the first time he's gone to the second circuit twice.
Yeah.
And he's gone, well, I know this once enough, and then he wins the race. Like, that just shows talent, immense talent. The other thing is he, you're right. They make quick decisions sometimes in Formula One. Like, if they can see talent, they make a quick decision straight away. It's like Colapinto to a certain extent. I mean, he's had a couple of good results, and then boom, he's back.
They
he's
must
in.
See something in the data and everything as well. Like, yeah. I don't know what
they
do.
The story goes that weekend at Spa, when they had the debrief, the other driver was Andre De Cesaris in the other Jordan. And so they're doing the debrief on the Friday, and he's like, oh, you know, I'm coming out of Puan, which are these corners around the back of the track, coming into Fangs, and the car's sort of jumping out. It won't. I have to back off. And Schumacher's like, I'm flat through there. And they're looking at him, and they're, you know.
Mm.
Now, here's a driver I've been driving for 3-4 years in this team, or in Formula One in general, maybe longer. And he's telling him what's wrong. The best analogy, James, it's like a Costa came on the KTM.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone thought the KTM was all wrong, and then this kid, what? What are these other two bananas? Oh, shouldn't, whatever. What
yeah,
are these
I
other
what
two? You know, like, how's this kid just going doing all this stuff, and these guys have been riding this bike for 4 or 5 years? That's the best analogy I can give you, is the Costa coming to KTM, Senna, Schumacher going onto that Jordan, and then the Benetton.
Do you reckon it's a, I don't want to say a sign of complacency when it's like a driver or a rider where they've just been in the team for too long and they just, you just need a fresh set of, a fresh feeling, a fresh set of eyes to look at something.
It happened. It's 100%.
And I think that's what KTM had to do this year as well.
That is 100% right. Like, back to Formula One, in 93, they signed Michael Andretti. Because the previous couple of years, Senna was teammates with Gerhard Berger. He went back to Ferrari. And as the year was going on, Michael Andretti was struggling. You know, he was flying back to America. He wasn't fully committed to the sport. Mm. And then they changed the rules about how many laps you could do on a weekend. So he was up against it. And mid-season, they sacked him at Monza. He just got a podium. And they brought Mika Häkkinen, who was the test driver. So Mika Häkkinen was a test driver for McLaren at the time. And this went around the fact that Senna was only driving race by race and he was getting $1 million a race, okay? And he wouldn't commit to the whole year. And this is why Ron Dennis was saying to Mika, look, I need you just there in case he doesn't turn up. You can jump in, right? And Ron Dennis said, I'll never do this again, because Senna had him at ransom the whole year, like, oh, I'll do this race. Are you going to... Nah, and he ended up doing every race, but literally on... Pay the money first, and he's waiting for the facts to come. There's all these stories. It's crazy how that year unfolded from
McLaren. What year was that?
93.
Yeah, right, okay.
And in the meantime, he's winning.
Yeah.
So Senna won 5 races in 93.
Mm.
So Mika Häkkinen comes along, and in his very first race, he out-qualified Ayrton Senna. So that in itself told you two things. Like, fuck, who's this kid? Like, nobody out-qualifies Ayrton Senna, especially in their first go. But Senna was a little bit asleep because he'd been so, back to your point, he'd been so used to this pleb second driver, if you like, needs that bit of a kick up the ass, if that's the word for it. I mean, that's a silly thing to say about Ayrton Senna, doesn't it? Never needs,
but I get what you're saying.
That's back to your point. I'm just giving you a different analogy of a situation where that happened to one of the greats.
Yeah.
You know, and even when I think Montoya teamed up with Kimi, they all said, oh, Kimi will have to dig deeper now. Yeah, you know, you just, and you're going to see this with Leclerc this year. This is back to this Hamilton Leclerc thing. You're right. Leclerc is bitter criticism. He makes mistakes in the races. Tom?
Yeah, 100%. Right? No, it's his mind. It's his, and he's shown that over the last 2 or 3 years, just those silly mistakes. Yeah. Like Azerbaijan putting into the wall in qualifying, and those head-to-head battles, he struggles.
And
so
the thing about Leclerc that gets me, he actually says it. Like, he has, he's stupid. And I'm like, you're bagging yourself on world feed. Yeah. Like, shut up, mate. Like,
yeah, he's his own worst enemy.
You're not a dickhead,
enemy.
But
yeah.
you're making it sound like yourself like a dickhead.
Yeah.
You get it once, you get it twice. But 3-4 years later, he's still having a go at it. I'm like, mate.
The thing is, look at Verstappen, though. I can't actually remember. Probably Saudi Arabia 21. When's he actually made a mistake?
His last mistake.
He doesn't make mistakes.
So get this. I heard a stat the other day. He hasn't finished outside the points. Okay. And this is taking away accidents, right? Since 2016 Spa.
Wow.
Okay. It's classified outside. Yeah. And so that's 8-9 years ago. And now I remember that race at Spa. He came into turn one, dived bomb and not hit Kimi in the Ferrari.
He did, yeah.
And then coming up at Rouge, he was out because he fucked his front suspension. That's the last time he made a mistake. He was 17.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Going back to teammates, I know there's no rule, but is it better to have, for my analogy, fierce competitors that are at the peak of their game, like a Valentino and a Jorge Lorenzo, or is it better to have a Marc Marquez and a Danny Pedrosa?
In F1, the model has been proven. They call it the Schumacher model now. This is what it's called, right? You get one guy. He's your man. And that's Max Verstappen.
Yeah, we've seen how many teammates he's gone through.
Well, same with Hamilton with Bottas as well.
Yeah, but...
like, that's another... like, yeah, Bottas was just there.
But that was different because they got caught on the hop because Nico turned it up overnight and they were desperate to get a driver because he said, I won the championship, I'm retiring. Like, they were dirty on him. Nico later said, he goes, I'm dirty what he did to us at the time because he just, I'm the champion, now I'll just pull the pin. Like, literally 2 days after he won that championship, he retired. Because he knew, I'm not going to say he fluked it, but he knew he would never be able to do that effort again against Lewis Hamilton.
I thought that was a boss move.
Good on, listen, looking back now, I agree with you. At the time, I was like, what the hell weak is this?
Because Hamilton would have just wiped the floor with him the next year.
And he knew that too. So back to your point, and the offset to this Schumacher model is the McLaren one. See, they've brought Piastri in. And now they've got two top drivers
vying for that top.
And this is the thing. We spoke about this. It's rattled Lando a bit. It has. Okay. Didn't see this coming. Didn't expect it. And now, good luck to them. How they're going to. And we saw last year they made a mess of it. They made a mess of it. Mm. So many races. They just said, listen, mate, stay there, move over. Like that attack at Monza. That should not have happened. You know,
Hungary was just terrible.
Hungary's another one. You know, Spa.
It was laughable.
But at Spa, Lando had to get out the way because Piastri, and to his credit, he dive bombed him. But if Lando doesn't move out the way, they crash.
Yeah.
And they're both out. Yeah. This is where you're going to have this problem when you got two guys on the same level and it's a winning car. That's why 07 happened because you had Alonso and Lewis Hamilton, the rookie. Alonso thought he was the number one, got told he was the number one. Next minute, Lewis is winning races. And it's like, what's going on here? And there's Kimi in the background collecting wins. And all of a sudden, McLaren handed that championship. No way Kimi should have won that title.
Mm.
But again, it was only because Massa had bad luck at Monza that he dropped out of the running. So then Ferrari had to back Kimi for the rest of that season. So I'm just going back to this 2v1. This is why the other night when you asked about who's going to win it this year. To me, it all still points to Max. Because we know it's him. And we all know Lawson's going to get... We know this.
Oh, I mean, wait and see, I think, with Lawson. He could surprise us.
Yeah.
You know what was really impressive for me with Lawson when he first... And I know it's little things, but when he first came out, it was the Dutch Grand Prix qualifying. Didn't practice. Came straight into qualifying. Yeah. It was on a slightly wet track on slicks.
Mm.
And he puts it into Q2.
It was very impressive.
Me, I was like, fuck. Like, I don't think anyone else... coming in could do that. Like, that was really, really impressive. And it's those little small things. Like, qualifying is a big thing. You're one-on-one with the car on the track. That's where you show your talent. That's where your Ayrton Senna was so good. And that's where all these other drivers we know were so good.
And that's the thing. Like, saw a clip from Brundle the other day. He's saying, Lewis is starting to make little tiny mistakes in qualifying that are costing him.
Qualifying is a big thing for him last year. It was terrible.
Yeah,
I'm
saying this is showing that that's where you lose it. You lose it in quali speed. When a driver loses his... it's that quality speed, that little half a tenth or a tenth. And that's why there was too much inconsistency or consistently making mistakes. And he was pissed off about it, you know. But can you rectify that at 40? Yeah, you can, you're coming off the mountain. Hello, he's, I'll say it again, he's 40, you know. And I think the way he's been driving Alonso, who's now 4 years older, they're making it look like, oh. But I'll say it again, these cars are too easy to drive.
Yeah, well, you didn't get that back in the day. What in Schumacher in 06, how old was he?
He was 35, 36.
Yeah, because it's amazing. That was like the retirement age back then.
It was.
Same as, like, I mean, footy players, we always think 35 is like...
You're done.
You're done. See, same as motor racers. Hang on.
Sorry, mate.
So that was a big thing. Nowadays, they can go longer and longer and longer and longer. And as to your point, Mark, is the cars are very easy to drive.
We saw with Rossi. He went, we can say it now, he went probably 3 years too long.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know, I mean, and again, when he was winning, his competition wasn't, you beat what you beat at the end of the day, but really, who was he really beating? But when he got to his mid, he had Lorenzo, Pedrosa, Marquez, Stoner. They were, that weren't they? And it's like when Shu came back, yeah, you know, Hamilton, Kimi. There were these other drivers now that were before. There was only three top drivers, and now there was five or six. And to the Shoe's credit, he was still good enough to be a top 10 driver after 3 years out, but not a top two or three.
We put it on pole in Monaco. that year, and it was like,
But he had a stupid penalty. I know, he had the penalty. Spain. But then he DNF'd as it turned out. Yeah, so it would have been tragedy.
True.
He starts the pole leading and then the engine blows up.
But it's amazing. I think Monaco is the biggest equaliser of talent as well. Like, you can really... Like, you looked at Senna over the years, you put it 1-2 seconds sometimes in qualifying ahead of the rest. So
that's huge.
Yeah. So that's a big thing. And I think him putting it on that pole that day, I was like, he's still got it deep down.
Yeah. And back to the launch...
Were you there that day?
No, not there. Not at Monaco, that one. But
What year did you go?
I went in 08, I think.
Oh, hey. So Hamilton won in the rain.
Yeah. In the rain. He went off like five times or something.
Yeah, he won in the rain. And Massa, I remember.
Massa went off at Saint-Evard. Yeah, because it was raining. It was one of those rare ones, and it made the race, to be honest. Like, otherwise, it would have been best processional, like they all are. But the rain, that moment made it. But back to Hamilton, like, you know, the F1 Instagram account, like 5 million viewers, and they had their record amount, that one post of him standing in front of the Enzo's house there, they got their most ever likes ever.
Did you see what the sponsors made? Like HP made 60 grand on the post, and all their other little sponsors were making like 30, 40 grand on that post.
Okay.
Just for having their logo on there.
No way.
Yeah.
So there was a photo of him and John Eklund. That's the big boss of...
Oh, I saw this, the shoes. Go on. They're famously sponsored by Puma, and he's wearing Adidas shoes, head of Ferrari. How does that happen? How does a PR person happen?
Listen, he's the boss of Ferrari, okay?
Yeah, I suppose. True.
Right?
Is he not Italian, though, is he?
Maybe not. John Eklund doesn't sound... Yeah. I mean, that name's not Italian. I really don't know. But
yeah, he's... I think he might be... I don't know if he's American, but he's not... He's not like a European.
What's his name?
John Eklund. E-I-K...
L-A-M, is it?
Yeah.
Just put Ferrari CEO. But, he's a tall guy. That's the other thing. That's probably the long shot, because he's... Lewis is very tall. That's why. And then hang on a minute. And that's what the... Subsequently, they've cut it from the knee down to cut the Adidas shoes out of the...
He's an Italian American.
Italian American, okay. What does that mean?
He looks American as.
Yeah, he does, yeah. He looks like the Oz GP CEO a little bit, Travis Auld. How's that look about him?
Yeah, maybe.
But just to see all the fans there and the fog.
Yeah,
it was interesting. They got there like 2 a.m. and whatever it was. I mean, that's just
amazing
makes
fans.
It. Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching Kim Ullman last night. He had put a post up, and it was, they went out there. Lewis had his mum and his dad there, which was, it was a crazy scene. And then
driving Ferrari, it's a religion. It's the heart of Formula One. It's the biggest thing
you can do.
Look,
it's happened now, three or four times now. I mean, I go back to when I saw Alain Prost go there. That was a big deal. Like, he left McLaren with the championship, so he took the number one with him.
Nice.
Because he was fed up with Ayrton Senna, wasn't he?
Well, the policies got too much. Yeah. They drove him 2 years. They were crashing into each other. It was like, nah, I've got to get out of here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so...
That was just the golden years.
That goes back to two big dogs and one team.
Yeah. That was just the golden years of Formula One. Yeah. 1990 to 94 was just... That was just unbelievable. And the stories they talk about those years, I mean, the hatred between Prost and Senna, and then famously Prost, you know, being a pallbearer. Pallbearer at the funeral. Yeah. And... You know, it's just
amazing.
It was
very strange. He said once he retired, Senna's attitude just totally changed towards him. He was on the phone to him and, you know, just totally, because that was his totem pole. So Senna's whole career was based on beating Prost. But once Prost retired, it just sort of mellowed towards him. And because he mentioned that over that, so Prost retired in Adelaide. 6 months later, Senna died. Mm. And in that period, Senna was ringing him up all the time. Hey, g'day, mate. What's happening? No, I'm not g'day, mate. But just they were talking, you know. Just
well, the respect would have to be huge.
It was always there.
Them.
The respect was always there.
You know.
But just yeah, and that was the whole thing. And there was a video when because at the time Prost worked for French TV as a commentator, and on his qualifying lap, because of Renault, Senna did a lap and talked while he was driving the lap, and he goes, "Oh, and a big cheerio to Alain Prost." You find that on YouTube.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and it was like, whoa, you know, what's happened here? And that's when we sort of got wind of, it wasn't until after he died that we found out about this kiss and making up over that winter that, you know, Senna was just constantly ringing him up in the middle of the night. You know, oh, look, you know, and, because he was a very intense person, Senna. He was a very intense person. You know, he was just so, you know, deep-minded about so many things and, yeah.
It's interesting, though, when you talk about those rivals, it's the exact same thing, to a degree, with Rainey and Swans. They hated each other.
Yeah.
And then Rainey got injured, couldn't ride anymore, and then Swans, you know, they rekindled again, but he lost his love for motorcycle racing because he didn't have that person to beat. He didn't have that barometer.
Some people like that. You've seen Lewis, when he gets angry, when something's going against him, he just finds his fire. And, you know... It's
like Michael Jordan. You had to have an enemy.
The best, and that's the best example.
It is, yeah.
That was the best. If you're pissing them off, don't piss these people off.
Yeah.
You're gonna piss these. Marquez is the same.
Yeah. Lance Armstrong was famous as that in the peloton. He goes, "This guy fucking said something about me in the media." He was just making it up in his head, chasing him on the mountain. And then in the end, it's crossover the line. He goes, "Oh, that never actually happened." It's amazing. But it's just it's a killer attitude that you see in top sportsmen. And you see it everywhere.
That's what separates
it. Yeah. And you see it in Max. You see it in Hamilton, 100%. You know.
And that's why, going back to the MotoGP, I haven't seen all of it, but that video of some doco Ducati did, and Todd Dodds, he's getting stuck into Pecco. You're too nice.
Yep.
You know, what are you doing? I haven't seen it, but... I've heard enough to think, okay, he's having a go at him. It was a sprint race.
It was interesting.
Thailand.
And that's where Marquez is going to kick him up the ass as well.
Yeah, that's how it looks. You're right. It does. Because Pecco's just... And the big, to his credit as well, like he said, when all that happened with Valencia and the floods, he was the first one. He's going for the championship. I'm not going.
Mm.
It's wrong. Yeah. They're all trying to make it happen. Oh, no, we'll still go there. This is when the news broke. He just came. He's the world champion. Coming straight out, I'm not going.
Can you believe that happened? Actually, like, think about that. The championship was going down the wire.
And he said, "I don't care if I lose the championship."
And then the floods happened at the track, or that obviously the whole area. And then they had to move. Like, they're gonna make a movie about that one day.
It's amazing though what Bagnaia said.
Yeah.
Well, this is back to his character. This is just who he is.
It's cool. I got a lot of respect for him.
The same, and. He was copying a bit of shit because remember at the last race, oh, is he going to back them all up and, you know, like Lorenzo did in that 2015 famous season.
Yeah, Lorenzo did, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not his way, you know.
But he stayed on the podium and like stood there, clapped Jorge Martin. Like, he would have been hating it, but he showed the respect.
Well, at the end of the day, he realised he got beat by the better man on the day or the year, and then he realised also, since acknowledged, I've made too many mistakes.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, 11 wins, but then 5... DNFs on a Sunday, I think it was, Tom.
Yep.
But this is who he is. And I get Tardozzi, but Tozzi's from the other side. You know, he was a killer when he rode superbikes and stuff, you know.
Yeah, and he's a killer team manager.
Well, that's why he's in the role, you know.
You know what's funny talking about that? I read an article today. Casey said, Casey Stoner, between the Marc Marquez-Valentino Rossi rivalry, he said the issue he has is with Valentino's the one that started it, and he said he shouldn't have poked the bear because he should have been smart enough to know that Mark Marquez was going to bite back hard. He said it worked back, you know, in the early days against Cede Gibernau, Max Biaggi, and all those riders.
All those guys.
But Mark Marquez, he said he's just going to bite back twice as hard, and you know he's older.
Well,
if he didn't poke the bear, you know, maybe I would
have thought at the time watching it, I thought, well, gee, that. And we're all Rossi fans, but I thought this is silly from you, mate, because you didn't learn from Lorenzo, because you tried it on Lorenzo, and Lorenzo's like, nah, mate, I've got my own identity too, you know, because that, and that's just how Rossi, it was all psychological. And Prost was the same, and these greats, they know how. Nico Rosberg told this story back to that Monaco pole position. The Mercedes team had a toilet at the garage down in the pits. This is the tight pits in Monaco. And he was waiting to go to the toilet. And he said, Michael was in there for like 40 minutes.
What was he doing?
No. The point of it was he was doing nothing. But he deliberately stayed in there, knowing Nico was outside waiting to get in to make him all jittery. And it worked.
That's ridiculous. No phone back then. You got to just raw dog a toilet for 40 minutes.
Nico used to have a podcast about 4 or 5 years ago during COVID.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, it was good.
And he had Brio
Toro. Coverage is
and
really good.
He told that story on there.
Yeah, right.
And he's like, jeez. I was just waiting. He goes, I was waiting and waiting. You know, and he stood. The fact that he stood there, because it became a battle of the minds. You know. So again, just little. These are the things, and that's everyone's talking about Marquez. I'll wait till he starts turning the screws, because there'll be little tricks. I don't know what they are. I mean, we can only assume, but. There were little things that will go on inside that Giacchetti garage. I reckon
it's already started.
Well, look, we all watched the launch there. That was a great interview by Gavin Emmer. He did an amazing job. Asked really good questions. He's amazing. He really is.
Shout out to him. Marquez answered honestly. Like collisions happen. Like they shouldn't happen, but they're gonna happen, or they can happen. And he spoke really candidly about that, it wasn't the same sort of just general questions you always hear after the other. How's the year going
to
go?
I've got to ask about Portimao. That's what you want from a journo. Yeah. You want, ask the hard stuff.
Yeah,
come
he's
on.
Good. He's a great
Stop
journalist.
There licking, not there lick ass and, you know. Have
That's what people respect, what the fans respect. And then he's going to end up liking them anyway, because you want to see someone real.
Yeah, exactly. Back to Rosberg. How's his last two teammates, Michael Schumacher and Hamilton?
Yeah, it's pretty
rough. It's pretty incredible. It is. Yeah.
He's still got a championship out of it, though.
He'll always have that as well.
And at the time, it wasn't respected, okay? At the time, it wasn't. Because everyone thought, Lewis had this DNF at Malaysia, it would have changed everything, which probably would have. But since, you know, Bottas, now Russell, you think, you know what? Nico, he was fast. Like, he was the only... He's been proven to be the only guy that could take it to Lewis. And that year he won that championship, he won like 8 races in a row. He won the last 4 from the previous year and the first 5 from the... Think about it. 8 straight wins against Lewis Hamilton in the same car.
Mm. Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. He's very underrated. He's very underrated, Rosberg. Very underrated. Because he was so much closer to Hamilton than what Bottas was to Hamilton.
Well, everyone thought Bottas was going to be better than Nico.
Mm.
And then straight away, like, hang on a minute. Yeah. And that's what I've said. Since time has passed, Nico's got more and more respect. Like, mate, look what he did. He took that title, that one, you know, of all those years that Lewis won those championships, there's that one that he didn't, you know, and it's because Nico, you know, got the better of him in his own way, you know.
God, F1 this year is going to be insane. I just can't believe we're going to be sitting there on the Sunday and we're going to see Hamilton and Leclerc. We've got, you know, Max, you're going to have both the McLarens coming through. I mean, it's just going to be incredible.
And your mate, Kimi.
Yeah, Antonelli.
You know, little Antonelli coming in the Mercedes.
Yeah, it's going to be another aspect.
What a great thing that's
going to
be.
You know what's going into next year? It's going to be the first year in a very long time for me that I can go, I really couldn't care who wins. I think everyone's had enough success.
And I'll tell you why you're saying that, because we've gone from having 2.5 years of one person making a mockery of the sport, which is how good he is.
Yep.
And we're not knocking him. That's just who this guy is. He's so far above everyone else. That's my view. He is. To now, like, my God, look at these races. We don't know who's going to win.
Mm.
And that's what we're wanting more of that. And that's why, like, I don't care who it is, because we can't say for certain which one is it going to be. So.
And we'll see. And what I'm excited about, see if Red Bull can turn it around in their design team without Adrian Newey. That's going to be another aspect for me I'm excited about.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Australia Day, boys.
Yeah.
Pretty cool,
We've had a pretty rich history in motorsport over the years.
Yeah.
Being Australian. We've had... F1 world champions, Alan Jones. We've had MotoGP world champions, McDoohan.
Gardner. Casey Stoner.
What's next? Piastri looks like the man to take the throne. Jack Doohan, we'll see how he goes. It's looking pretty shaky for him, unfortunately. Very a lot of pressure going into the first half of the season.
Yeah. Can't see him surviving, but, you know.
And then Jack Miller could be, he's got a 2-year deal, James, or one. 1 year? One year deal. Could be the last hurrah for him.
It's pretty amazing, though. Like, we spoke about it a little bit last week on the talent Australia does produce. Like, I was going, I had to do something for work today, and it was going through a lot of motorcycle riders, all Australian. And, like, there's that many world titles in there from, like, motocross, supercross, speedway, world superbikes, Dakar. MotoGP, Dakar.
Yeah.
Des Nations. 6 days, like, there is a lot of, if for a, such a small population, and if people are listening outside of Australia, like, the actual motorcycle community is tiny. Yeah. So then get that talent out to overseas is another massive step again with almost no budget. You know, famously, Casey Stoner remortgaged his house to go overseas.
Well, his parents did.
His parents did. 12-year-old Casey, maybe not.
Oh, exactly right. There's been so many sacrifices. I think I don't think Piastri and Doohan have made the same sacrifices. So. Mr. Brighton boy and Mr. Five-time world champion boy.
But look, just on the Piastri thing, like, okay, Danny Rick, he had the Red Bull program, so that he had the leg up there. But how Piastri has gone into Formula One is astonishing.
Yeah, it's a great call.
Did his junior career, obviously, go-karts down at Port Melbourne and stuff, but to get into the Prema team in F3, which is a big coup, right, and then to win the championship, well, that's straight away payday for him.
100%.
Not as in money, but the fact is he had that path.
Yeah, but money helps, though, Mark. That's the other thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah.
But you can't get into Formula One without money.
No,
it's just not anymore.
It's helped Mark Webber. Mark Webber is his manager, another Australian. Yeah. So that's because he's opened some doors for him as well. But you've got to have... not just the backing, but the talent to back the backing to say, no, I can do this. And he was doing it.
And what an unusual personality he's got. It's just not... He's almost dorky, isn't he?
He comes across dorky, but I just think he's just got this... You know, you're not going to... He's never going to do a handstand on the podium because he's won the world championship. He was just like...
He'll just put his hands up.
He will. He's just nonchalant is the word I'm looking
nonchalant,
for.
Nonchalant, that's a great
obviously
word.
It works, though. You know, maybe he's just cool, calm, collected under the helmet where, you know... People like Charles gets in his own head or Lando, and that could be the difference.
He's one of these young drivers that the other ones don't know how to take him.
Mm. Well, you can't read him.
That's his massive advantage. You're right. You know, a Max or even someone like a Max is going, well, you know, how do I rattle this kid?
True.
You know, because he's just like, because what was that one in Abu Dhabi? Because Max got a penalty for holding him up. It's like, yeah, not bad. You know, overdue for the world champ. Well, he just made some off the cuff comment about it while he was driving around.
It's a hint of autism, I reckon. It's a hint of autism.
But like, surely the mum used olive oil back growing up. Like, she wouldn't have been using the vegetable oil. So,
True. So
that's a bit of like, could have been Teflon. I don't know.
Who knows? They don't have filtered water or something like that. Brighton.
Yeah.
Maybe lots of cordial.
Yeah, cordial. Maybe it's a cordial kid.
Soy boy. He's a soy boy.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, that's probably it. Soy boy. It's Brighton. They're all. I would like to live there, though, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bloody oath. But yeah, Casey Stoner, he's always renowned to be probably the most talented rider a lot of people have ever seen.
I think everyone we've ever spoken to said Casey Stoner's talent's been unmatched.
Oh, 100%. And look, it just...
Raw talent.
Obviously, he started so young, but just... Oh, everyone was shocked he retired so early. Yeah. You know, 29.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But having said that, he's come from the country boy... You know, breed. Had enough of that life. Period. Yeah. That's all. That's all. It was
and he hated the fame of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair enough.
It's not for everyone.
Yeah.
You know,
and
Max
that's
hates
that'd be
it.
Hard. It'd be hard. You know, you can eat it up and make it a business like Valentino, or your Casey Stoner.
I think that's the only. I'm not going to say regret, but like the thought of 2013 of him and Marquez in the same team.
I know.
Because that's what it was looking like. You know, just what I mean.
It's a sliding doors moment, though. Like
it was. Of course, it was.
You've got McDoohan and Valentino.
Yeah, that too. There's another one.
You know.
That's another one.
There's just two generations and then another two generations.
Yeah, but again, that was Mick's unfortunate accident
yeah, yeah.
that stopped that, because that was on the cards. He was they were going to be teammates. It was talked up that he was coming in that following year, and then it just so happened that Mick
hurt himself.
He was done. He was done, because that was another prospering, you know, this young rookie, Rossi, against this, you know, Aussie blokes won five on the trot. But I think, given how, you know, that's the thing, how talented Casey is, or was, you know, and the way Marquez approached it, was they had two different approaches. This is the thing, you know, which would have made for an amazing...
Similar riding styles, though, which probably helped Honda so much.
Yeah. Well, we keep seeing it every year, don't we? They keep doing that rerun at Phillip Island through Stoner Corner. Yeah, they show Stoner 10 years ago, then they show Marquez. And, yeah, doing exactly the same. And, you know, I think I heard an article where Marquez said, he goes, oh, I want to look at Casey's data and see how he did it, so I want to copy that. And he has.
Yeah, he hasn't he?
You know?
Yeah, Casey was amazing. And, like, the talk of him, even when he was a kid, like, it was huge just through the industry and through the racing in Australia. They kind of always...
Well, I think the other thing that adds to his legend status is the fact that, you know, once he got off that Ducati and then went to the Honda, and then nobody could ride that bike.
Yeah.
Nobody could ride that Ducati. That made him, like, wow. You
know, well, that's true.
Rossi went there. Yeah. Whoever went there could not ride that bike.
Well, Rossi took his seat.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, that adds to his status even more. Not just the fact he won two championships, two different manufacturers, which was a feat in itself, but...
If he was on a Honda from, like, 2009, he would have won more titles.
Yeah.
He would have won more titles.
Yeah.
He just jumped off too late.
Yeah. But for me, it was like watching him win on that Ducati. Yeah, and again, first world champion for Ducati. That's enough. That was... Come on. Yeah, huge. How huge is that?
And no one saw it coming.
I remember going to the Ducati factory because I went to Mugello, and for the day I went up on the Saturday morning up to Bologna, and when I got there, outside the entrance, and people will see when you know who've already been, but there's a billboard on the right hand wall, and I looked up and there was a picture of him on the Ducati, and the caption was "Welcome to the Stoner Age." And I just stood there and go, fuck, that's a fucking Aussie in downtown Wogland here, you know, just taken all before him. And I was like this, I was like proud and like, but like, I was like, it was, I'm just, I got chills. I'm like, look at that. This kid from outback wherever, you know, I shouldn't say that, but you know, I'm like, that was the billboard. Welcome to the Stoner Age. And I'm like, that's an Aussie kid.
That's awesome.
But isn't that crazy? Australia's got such a tie off Ducati. Casey, Troy Bayliss, huge with Ducati, does all their events. Troy Corsa won a title with him. You know, obviously Jack rode for Factory Ducati and Pramac with him for 4 years. Like, there's such a big tie there. It's just a weird match made in heaven that kind of works.
Well, we mentioned this, didn't we talk about how the Europeans are very jockey-sized, and we're talking about the Aussies more robust. You know, okay, and Casey goes against that. He's more the European jockey type, but I think it's the Australian attitude that that what they saw in Casey, and then with the superbike riders before, then going back to the late 90s, of course, or in Bayliss, that, you know what, they're matching up there, you know, and that's why they took Miller on. And I said, you know, Miller, if you look back, when they signed Miller, the factory team from Pramac, he was supposed to be the guy that was going to lead them to the promised land, and Pecco was going to be the understudy, you know, but it turned out the other way around. But Miller was the one. That's how I remember it. Miller was the one they were like, well, he's the guy that's going to do it for us.
It's just amazing how quick it turns around in motorsport, isn't it?
Like, what does that say, mate? You're only as good as your last race.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's an old saying, but that's the truth.
He was the talent coming through that Pramac team, won those couple of races, and then...
Oh, and through Moto 3.
Oh, yeah.
Should have won that title.
And the thing was, it was what he did in the wet.
It was always on his own.
That's again another Aussie thing.
Yeah, it is.
Christopher Mullen, Anthony West.
Yeah.
Well, they say that about flat track and things. You just learn now. Like, it was amazing listening to, going back to what Pecco was saying in that interview about how they're talking about Marquez at...
when they were kids, yes.
No. In Spain, which is the track that Marquez won his first race on last year?
Aragon.
And he goes, he was... out of the blocks, 2 seconds faster, and then he was 8/10 of head. Like, he just knew
the dirty track.
He could see the grip. He goes, how does he do this? He goes, I'm envious of two things: him on a slippery surface and turning left.
Yeah.
And he goes, I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he does it. So, it's so interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing, and just like the the amount of talent that's come through, like, you know, you look at, we speak about it all the time, but Jett and Hunter Lawrence dominating off-road.
That's crazy, isn't
their
it?
Stories are incredible, and they're still going. Like, yeah. Jett's already a Hall of Fame rider. They've both won, like, multiple championships. Jett's definitely won multiple.
Chad Reed.
Yeah,
you know, I thought he was groundbreaking or pioneer. For sure.
And he went started in Europe and then had to go to the States with his missus. Did it really tough.
Yeah.
It's for the off-road stuff. Then you got Toby Price, Daniel Sanders, that go out and win Dakar, which is one of the hardest races you're ever going to do. It's crazy. Pretty insane. Mm. And then, you know, you've got riders like Anthony Gober, who was just a talent, just absolute talent, a waste of talent.
Well,
but
yeah, just sad that he passed last year. And I remember him when I was a kid. He was just
another level.
Oh. But yeah, just got caught up in the partying too much. You know, but
also an Aussie thing to do.
Yeah, I know, but he just took to that next level.
Yeah.
You know, he was burning the candle at both ends through his whole life, or this whole, you know, early career. But had he applied, and that, it's all the old way, had he applied himself in the other, man, who knows what he would have, how many would have won.
Well, he went to factory Suzuki, was it, for a year in GPs? Yeah. He raced a year in GPs. I think it was Lucky Strike. I'm sure it was Lucky Strike.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, because he came off Kawasaki in the super bikes. Yeah, it was. You're right.
Yeah, in the 90s. So it's just, and you know, Australia in the 90s with the Americans was huge. You had Mick Doohan, Gober, Darrell Beattie.
Beattie's another one.
Who's the other fella?
A bit before there was Kevin McGee.
Kevin McGee,
he
that's
was around
the one.
The Gardner era.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's a lot of talent that's come through.
Oh, man, huge amount.
In the two wheels.
And pioneering talent as well. Like, you talk about Stoner around finding his way around Stoner Corner. Like, no one was flat through there.
Yeah.
Gary McCoy with spinning up the rear wheel. Yeah, and they're
McCoy,
like,
and McCoy, another one in the wet.
Yeah, they're like, what's going on? Like, they didn't understand the tyres, how he could do this. And it changed the whole thing for GP going forward. I mean, it is amazing. And yes, you're going to get thousands of these little Spanish kids coming into the sport, but so excited when someone from America or Australia or
Or Japan.
Japan, not as much. when they come into the GP circuit, because they just offer such a different attitude. And you know,
Aussies and Americans are always the best ones to watch, I reckon.
Yeah, and the British as well. I mean, we met a couple of the young kids on last year in October, and it's exciting. It really is.
Yeah, I love it. Mm. It's very cool.
Back to the British, you know, probably since Fogarty, there's no one really.
Well, I'll tell you why. It's because of British Superbikes. That championship's, and this is what Gavin Emmett said as well, it's so good, it's actually bad for them. Because they all just want to race BSB, and they can make a great living out of that. Yeah. That's what they do.
They don't have to travel.
They don't have to travel. I think they do a couple rounds in Spain, maybe.
Yeah, they do. They do, actually, yeah.
But, you know, it's all factory-backed or it's shop-backed. They can make money doing what they love. And they go through their ranks doing that. So they don't even bother going through like those little prototype Moto3s where it's more money. You've got to travel more. Even though they're in England, they shouldn't be complaining about travel like us.
Yeah.
And they don't have that talent coming through.
Hot takes, Jimmy boy.
What do we got? That's Jamesy995. KTM to do a Braun GP this season.
What a call.
Nah, different circumstances. There's no rule changes that they can compete with this year. So there's no...
Well said, Tom. That's
There's no a seconds or a half a seconds they can find, unfortunately.
Okay.
They'll be struggling. They'll be struggling this year. And I don't see them... I don't see three of them out of the four of them doing anything, to be honest.
Mm. Mm. Well, that's how it's pointing to, isn't it?
Mm.
Interesting. I like it. At @Z_AndrewArthur. Fraud finishes higher in the championship than Pedro Acosta.
There's no, absolutely no way.
Fraud.
Vinales.
Yeah.
He needs to get off the SmackDown.
You don't think that's going to happen? He's always got his believers, though. That's the thing.
Anyone who's still believing him after the back end of last year, after the way he started, just...
No. What do you think of his mentality after the Yamaha thing?
Sometimes you see him in Parc Fermé when he's taken pole or had victories. He just comes across, he's going on about something and he's talking about...
He's intense, I guess.
You know, and that's his character, but I don't know. It just doesn't add up sometimes.
No, I like it. Fair enough. At Jack O'Dell. BMW to make their way into MotoGP after the fall of KTM.
I think that it's coming, and I've called it early that it's going to be a VR46 bike. It's interesting to see Toprak and Bautista talking it in testing.
Right.
There was like a little microphone somewhere, and they were like, "When are you going to MotoGP?" And he was like, "When BMW goes in." And then he goes, "Oh, watch out, the cameras are on." So I think there's something. And that's the whole thing with Toprak going to Beamer. There had to be some sort of promise there going into the future.
Yeah, into the new regs.
Because we know that he wants to be in MotoGP. So
he's tried. He's definitely tried.
Yeah.
This is a good one. At Tom F145, Ducati Lenovo team to win every Sunday race this year.
I think so.
Just the two men in red.
If the bike's what they're saying it is, well then...
They've been right for the past few years, that's for sure.
So only Digi has got the third 25 bike.
The VR46.
It's amazing he's got the third bike. I mean, I know he's shown some talent, but...
It's
just the way the cards have fallen. There were so many musical chairs last year.
Yeah.
Well, Bez could have had it.
Well, as I mentioned last week. You know... The Pramac thing, then all of a sudden, you know, VR46 ends up with a factory bike, and they've given it to a guy who 12 months earlier was out of the sport.
They don't actually have a very strong lineup, Ducati. When you look at those six riders, you've got the two guns, but realistically, Digia, yes, he's showing some talent. Morbidelli, no idea what he's going to do. Aldeguer, no idea what he was going to do. Alex Marquez is there or thereabouts. It's not a fully strong lineup.
They don't have a dedicated, like, Zarco developer.
I think Alex Marquez will surprise in the first part of the season.
That's what I think.
Okay, because the 25 bike might be back to what it was supposed to be last year, because remember the 24 was just so far in front, straight out the block, whereas the previous years, that's when Bastianini won those first three, four races... In 22, I think it'll get back to that again. So don't be surprised there's an early win for Alex Marquez.
Yeah, okay, that's a good call, like a sprint race
only
win
because,
or something. Yeah.
The 25's just not quite, you know, where it's going to be, you know. And that's why I think him... Morbidelli's a funny one. Like, there's no reason. He's on a bike he rode last year. So he should know it and know it better than the others. They're getting this bike now.
He's got every excuse in the book, that fella, bro.
Well, this will be the ultimate excuse.
But he was injured, and then he was fine and had the bike
again,
and did nothing.
This will be the ultimate excuse. If these other guys who are now getting on the 24, this is Marquez, Aldeguer, Furman.
We
saw Furman.
Footage.
Furman. So, yeah, that'll be the measuring stick.
I love your pronunciation.
Yeah.
At Yanni,
taking his Friday night out to spend the time with us, and I'm mocking him. It's so unfair, isn't it?
He'll apologise to you afterwards.
Yeah, sure he will.
At Yanni _LV.
Yanni, what's going on? We've got some bloody ethnic viewers. That's nice.
Yeah, we do. Lewis Hamilton won't finish top five in a championship.
Not a bad call. I don't mind that. I don't mind that at all. There's a lot of talent. There's a lot of talent there, and a lot of fast cars. So. Can he qualify? That's going to be the big thing, Mark Danby.
Well,
can he qualify?
But just where's that car at?
Well, who knows? They're all going to be close. That's the thing. Again, there's not a big rule change for next year. So they're going to just develop that car and all the cars in a similar way. And we'll get to a peak performance, I think, before the new rule changes come through.
Well, they're pretty much at the ceiling now. This is the thing about these regs. The ceiling's been reached.
Yeah, it has. They're so fast.
And back to your point, you know, if Red Bull just got to do a few things, they're not that far away. It's the Merc that's the inconsistent car.
It's
wins when it's not supposed to, and they don't understand why it's fast, and that's why no one's talking about Russell at the moment as being a contender. It was supposed to be McLaren and Ferrari to fight it out, and then obviously the Max factor, as you call it. But to Lewis qualify, like, are you really, if it is McLaren and Ferrari, is Max Verstappen not qualifying on the second row more often than not?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I don't think so. No, he's still minimum getting second row.
Isn't he? Yeah, well, they're all going to be taking points off each other next year. That's the thing.
Yeah, but just for straight out qualifying speed, I'm talking.
Well, I think straight out qualifying speed, Max is still the
best. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If McLaren and Ferrari are the supposed two standout cars, Max is still somehow finding his way onto that second road minimum.
And it's all about like straight line speed now. I mean, that's the next thing for next year. I mean, these DRS zones, everything that they've developed these cars into, speed down the straight, it's so important, because once you get out in front, you know, it's it used to be the case you got out in front and you stayed there. Now, it's not the
break
case.
That tire. You got to break that one second DRS.
Last one, boys. 13 underscore Big Mac. Miller's input will put Fabio back on the podium by the end of the season, which I like that call.
That happened sooner than that.
Yeah, I think I like that call as well.
Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah.
You know, two extra riders to help develop that Yamaha, get that V4 going.
Get that V4 going. We want to see that V4 up and about before we get to Europe.
100%.
Yeah. We'll see the debut in Buriram, so looking forward to it.
Oh, Buriram, it's all happening.
Yeah. It's all happening. Come along.
Motorsport Republic is going to...
Mark's got a couple of spare bedrooms in his
Motorsport
apartment.
Republic is going to Buriram.
We're going to Buriram.
It's all Buriram, Buriram, Bam-Bam.
Buriram. Buriram. Bam-Bam.
By the end of it, he'll be the Bam-Bam. He'll be the Bam-Bam by the end
boom,
of it.
He'll be getting boom-booms. That's what's happening.
All right, guys, have a great Australia Day. We love you. We'll see you next week for the 100th episode.
Yeah, happy Australia Day.
Happy Australia Day.
100. This is a Cheeseburger Lorenzo episode, by the way. 99.
Thanks,
99. Thanks, Cheesy. Thanks, Mark.
See you, bye.
Thanks, Jimmy boy.